Okay, we're going to talk today primarily about the civic organizing framework. And could we start out with having you talk a bit about the different elements of the framework and how they fit together?
Okay, and this part of the discussion comes out of the first discussion that we had where we were talking about why, what was the need for change. And so then in terms of, if you can define that there's a need for change, you have to come up in my mind with a solution strategy. And so that would be, in our case, the civic organizing framework. That would be the proposed solution strategy. Now, in order to make sense of the elements of the framework, I think it's important to know that a framework, it has an identity. So in this instance, civic organizing. Now, in order for that identity to have any integrity or any real meaning, there has to be a set of must-dos, things that you do distinctly that makes that a distinct framework. And I was taught that we might call those operating principles. It's how you operationalize an identity. Those principles have to be known by those who are implementing this framework, because they drive what people do, the practice. And so the framework captures all of that, has those elements within it. Specifically, the civic organizing framework starts with a set of beliefs that address the need that we outlined in the first conversation about the need for people to claim a stronger civic responsibility in the places where they spend their time. So we start with principles that capture that. And to me, one of the most interesting parts about the development of the framework comes from a story that I have with Tony. When Tony Mazengale and I got together, and I remember sitting and writing this framework out with him, I wanted to start with democracy as the first belief, the first principle, that we had to believe in democracy. And Tony said he didn't think that necessarily would be an easy sell to the people that he would be organizing, Tony being African American, and their experience maybe that wasn't that democracy was a high ideal. Not that they would reject that, but that, but they had perhaps a different relationship to that principle. So he won the argument, and so we start this framework with the belief in human capacity, what we call human capacity, and that. That capacity that we're focused on is their capacity to govern for the common good, if in fact that capacity is developed. So that's the real catch in our thinking. People are not born with the capacity to govern for the common good. This is a developmental process. So when you see the word capacity showing up in a lot of our work, like the civic capacity, civic imagination, civic organizing, you're talking about a developmental process, some developing the ability to do something that we're not necessarily born with. So there has to be a belief in that before democracy can actually work.
And it's a belief in that people have that ability. They are born with the ability to build the capacity.
Right.
Is that right? So that's kind of the fundamental.
I think you're right. I think the fundamental belief is that people have the capacity to be good, you know, or to do good things. Mm-hmm. And early on, when people would want to spend a lot of my time giving me examples about the people couldn't be good, and they would want to say, what about this, what about that, what about that? And I just early on just said to people, you either believe that people have the capacity to be good, or you're not going to be interested in this. You know, if you, and I said there are a whole lot of frameworks that when you think about them, they don't start with that belief. Many expert type frameworks do not start with the notion that people have the capacity to discern. And so you don't invest in it. Mm-hmm. So that was just the bottom line.
And in some ways, that's a belief in that everybody has this capacity, that it's not just a particular elite group of people who have the capacity.
And you have to invest in it. And you might find some people in the process that don't have that capacity. But if in a democracy you make the assumption that there are certain people who are not capable of governing for the common good, it determines who you decide to invest in. And so that's the first principle. The second principle is that democracy requires people to be able to govern for the common good in the tension between between democratic ideals and like freedom and equality, private and public, diversity and unity, so that democracy is a process that requires people to have the capacity to be within those tensions and to discern and to process within them. And that has to be developed. That's a capacity that needs to be developed. So the key thing in a civic organizing approach is that we teach that democracy is not a given, it's a process. The third key belief and principle would be that we all have a role that obligates us to govern, to put ourselves in that tension. And that role is active citizenship. So everybody has that obligation. And this goes beyond legal definitions of what it means to be a citizen. We think no matter what age you are, where you're from, you should be in a developmental process that develops your capacity to imagine the common good, imagine how your particular actions and decisions impact others around you, impact the larger community, and impact the society. Then that leads directly to the principle that began to distinguish this framework and really gets into the organizing aspect of the framework, which is political competence. The skill set that comes along with being able to be an active citizen is political competence. So the language of this framework is politics, power, interest, and it is assumed that the best form of politics is organizing. And
what do you mean by that?
By organizing? Organizing, properly understood, if you really draw upon, say, some of the fundamental notions of organizing that would come, say, from the Industrial Areas Foundation, it is about capacity building. It is about developing people's capacity to achieve an outcome. It's not mobilizing. So mobilizing means activism, gathering people together and aiming them at something. Using mobilized people as the power base to create change. Organizing is much deeper development. It might include that a kind of a mobilizing, but it is not meant to see people as objects, you know, for like a machine. Organizing really is about developing people's capacity to discern, to be strategic, to be politically competent on many, many fronts in order to be able to produce change based upon an analysis of power that lays out what is the barrier to justice, you know. And so it's a much deeper developmental process than activism or mobilizing.
And it's the disciplines that are within the framework that really helps people know how to do organizing.
Yes. I mean, what we did was we took let me address the last principle, and then we'll segue to what you were saying. The question was, okay, so where do you develop this competence? where do you develop this role? Where do you develop this capacity in order to be able to become a person who can carry the obligation of active citizenship? We said it was within everyday institutions. And when you developed members of institutions to take on this role of citizenship, a governing role, it obligates them to govern for the good of the institution if that institution sees its public purpose within the world, in the larger world. So it is of benefit to institutions to do civic development, because we have been able to prove that you are more able to achieve particular goals, institutional goals, if people have ownership over the governing process, if they have ownership over how those goals were determined, if they have a process for accountability. But what makes this an organizing framework, in my mind, is that those same people have the obligation to change that system if, in fact, it is proving not to be producing what it was intended to produce. Mm-hmm. So this is not citizenship just to do what the boss says. This is citizenship to really take on the deep obligation in a society for when those times happen, and they always do, when systems no longer are doing what it is that they were designed to do. And who's going to create that change? It should be its very members that do. We should not necessarily have to always simply let external circumstances beat down a system until it's no longer viable. You know, a functioning citizenry within systems should be able to see when change is necessary and to adapt public school systems, businesses, nonprofits, before they simply are so inadequate that they are let to fall on their own. Mm-hmm. So,
and that the idea of building civic leadership within institutions is one of the unique things about this framework, is it not? I mean, isn't that a kind of a defining element of the civic organizing framework?
Yes, and I really have not seen any other framework that does. This is a hard thing to express, but when you do civic leadership development on the inside of your system, you are investing in the engine, in the mechanism through which things get done, and that identity transcends the walls of your institution. So why would you bother with that? If you were an institutional leader, why would you bother with that? Because we know that, especially in times of transition and change, you need people that can think beyond the walls, they have a mindset that says, "Huh, change is happening." That change is happening not only not only to us, but in the world, and we need to be able to respond democratically and civically to that change. In the process, you will get the kind of leadership that will sustain your organization in a much, much better way. Those, when you look at studies in terms of what is a sustainable institution, you find that kind of mindset developed. If you don't name it as citizenship, you miss this opportunity to say it's a governing function, and it's a governing function that you can take into the larger world, which will produce a benefit back to your institution.
Yeah, that's a great argument for why organizations and institutions would take on this approach. You've also talked about this approach as being related to creating kind of citizenship schools within institutions.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
I borrowed that from Dorothy Cotton, who headed up the citizenship schools along with Andrew Young and Septima Clark during the civil rights movement.
the idea that, again, it goes back to that investment in the capacity for people to see themselves as governing members. And I was just so impressed by what they did, the developmental process that they did within a very short period of time, as long as it was tied to action that people needed to take. So the way that Dorothy tells the story is that that the citizenship schools that were developed during the Civil Rights Movement were actually the leadership development arms of the Civil Rights Movement. And she tells that story in the book, her book that she wrote. And I don't know that it's told anyplace else, you know, so it's a crucial story, and I just borrowed the idea from her. But so those who were part of, in this instance, SCLC, Southern Leadership Christian Conference, they were looking for leaders. Now, how did they define a leader? They defined a leader that were troublemaker, you know, somebody who wasn't who was resisting the kinds of things that were happening to African American people. And they found them. They would go to the community, and Dorothy tells the story that they would go to places like hair salons and places where people talked, and they would find out who were essentially the leaders within the community that were resisting. Those people were taken out of their community so they could have just a space where they were away from the daily struggle. So at the training, there was a realization that people really needed what Dorothy would call a grieving process. There was actually a way that people needed to grieve about the things that were happening to them. But it had to shift at a certain point to a discussion about their role. That gets you back to the capacity approach. Okay, so given all of these very bad things, what is the thing that you can do? And in this instance, they were talking about overcoming the barriers to being able to vote, which you had to be able to read sections of the Constitution in order to vote. So these were teachers at the citizenship schools, and they taught people how to read the Constitution or the passages that they would need. But they also went away with a plan that they took back to the community, and those then were literally organizers that would go back into the community. So I took this idea and I said, okay, so where do people find the barriers to their ability to see themselves as governing members within a democracy, or to relate to the notion of democracy as their obligation to govern for the common good? Well, those barriers were inside their institutions. And so we took the idea of setting up a space within the institution, called it an organizing agency. But it was like a citizenship school, only adapted to modern times and to professional culture and the kind of work plans that people had to do with their institutions and the goals. But those work plans were guided by the civic organizing framework.
Right.